recorder on here.
I'm done. Yes, go ahead.
Hang on here just a second. Okay, so today we're talking about leadership. And leadership, in my opinion, is the single biggest reason that organizations succeed or fail. It's strategy is important, assets are important. We've talked about all that. A good financial model is critical. But at the end of the day, the single biggest determinant of success is leadership. And leadership, and again, I'm just doing a free flow here, so George, so right, just bear with me, but because I've written some notes here. Leadership is a lot of different things, and I'm going to go through a list of different things that I've jotted down over the years. But you know, it's the art of influencing people. The art of influencing people. It's not about command and control. That's a management system. But leadership is about influencing people. It's about taking people to a place where they would otherwise not go or not be able to get there. Leadership is a balance between being realistic and being honest and being factual, but at the same time, creating hope and creating a plan and a pathway to lead people to a destination that they absolutely could not get to by themselves. As I always used to tell my senior managers, you know, our shareholders pay us to get an outcome that is different than what just would happen under normal operations or normal circumstances. Leaders drive their teams, in the case of a CEO, drive the whole organization to achieve beyond what they think they could do themselves. Leaders work, and they work best in partnership with other leaders. In other words, leadership is not a solo mission. It's about interacting, communicating, and partnering and bringing the best out in other leaders in the organization. You know, leadership, and I'm going to talk about this polarity again for a second. You know, leaders lead from many power bases, but the two most important power bases that they lead from is an intellectual power base. In other words, they are smart enough to be able to come up with a strategy. They're able to build a financial model, build the assets, so they can lead from a pure intellectual standpoint. But the other side of the spectrum, the other side of the polarity spectrum, is emotions. Good leaders not only lead from the brain, but they lead from the heart. And the most effective leaders can lead from both dimensions, and they bring the intellectual with the emotional. They bring the brain and the heart. And when those come together, that's what creates passion, and that's what creates outcomes that are superior to those leaders that only lead from one of those dimensions. And part of the emotional leadership base is the ability to be empathetic, not sympathetic, empathetic, to understand people and understand what they're going through as they go down this leadership path. Leaders aren't necessarily popular. If you need the constant adulation and positive feedback from those that you work with, you're not going to be a good leader. Leadership is not about popularity, but it's about influencing, and it's about convincing people that they, so that they believe that the leader and the strategy can produce success. People like to follow leaders that are successful. And success, as we've defined before, is success with shareholders, it's success with customers, it's success with partners, and it's success with people. This is a very important thing. At the end of the day, if you're in the Army, you don't want to work for a general that loses every battle. They could be the nicest general in the world. They could have the best strategy in the world. But at the end of the day, if they fucking lose the battle, no one wants to be in that Army. Okay? So it's incumbent on the leader to create an environment where people believe that if they work hard and if they execute the plan, they will be successful. Leaders make mistakes. They make mistakes all the time. I always used to tell my people I'm wrong, you know, somewhere around 60-70% of the time. And leaders have to be willing to accept that they're wrong and make adjustments. So good leadership is about listening, and not just listening from the organization, but listening from all dimensions and then making adjustments. Napoleon was a master at this. That's why the general always sat up on a hill and looked at the battle so that the general could make adjustments. Because when you put a strategy in place and you put the assets in place and you put a financial plan in place, very rarely does anything proceed along those plans. There's almost immediately obstacles or changes that occur. And a good leader is able to see what's working, what's not working, and then make adjustments. And much of that input is not only by observing, but also by listening and being out front with the people, not leading from the rear, but leading from the front. Leaders have to project self-confidence, not arrogance, but self-confidence. Again, you only want to work for people that you think are confident, that they believe in themselves, they believe what they're doing. You don't ever want to work for someone who is filled with self-doubt and filled with insecurity. Now, we all have self-doubts, but the art of leadership is to let people know you have doubts through your ability to empathetically relate to them, but still create a sense of confidence that what the organization is doing is right and moving in the right direction. Charisma is important. Charisma is important, but charisma is different than self-confidence. You know, charisma is an added dimension that can add even more to the equation. But at the end of the day, performance outweighs charisma. Charisma can help in the short term. Charisma, if you don't have results, doesn't create a positive leadership environment. And fundamentally, leadership is mostly about hard work, and it's about self-discipline. It's not about delegation. That's just a tool that the leader uses. The leader can't delegate the accountability and the responsibility for the organization. they have to accept that accountability, and accepting that accountability and responsibility requires hard work and requires discipline. And finally, from my point of view, leadership is a choice, a choice. Some people are good leaders, some people are lousy leaders. And at some point in time, you have to make a choice as to whether you want to be a leader or you don't want to be a leader, because leadership is hard work and does involve discipline. A lot of people think as they progress in an organization, as they get further and further in the organization, that means they don't have to work as hard. It means they can preside. It means they can just take the input from all the people that work for them. Bullshit. That's when you have to work even harder, because you have to have a plan. You have to have the self-confidence, all the things I talked about, in order to drive and lead the organization to an outcome that they didn't think they could get to by themselves. Now, I'm going to list a couple of things. I got this from Bob Iger's book that came out last year. I don't know whether you read it or not, but I thought it was a really good book. And he lists 8 or 10 characteristics. And these characteristics are part of the framework that I just outlined. So optimism. Well, optimism and self-confidence go together. Courage. Courage when everyone doubts what you are doing. Courage when you have a vision that is different than what the general thinking of an organization is. You know, I used to be a contrarian. If everyone told me the same thing, I knew I was wrong. And I'd always look for something else. But it takes courage to stand up to people. It takes courage to take the accountability and the responsibility to be out front and say, I believe in this. This is the direction we are going. We'll get into this more when we get into culture and the management system, but focus is a critical part of good leadership. Decisiveness. I can't tell you how many leaders want to have a task force. You know, the task force reports back and they still don't make a decision. I always used to say it's, you need to make decisions based on facts, but you're never going to get 100% of the facts. You got to be willing to make decisions on about 70-80% of the information that you'd like to have available to make a decision. If you wait for all the information, you will never make a decision. And by the time you make the decision, it's too late because the environment or the market has already changed. And if you make a decision and it's the wrong decision, then if you have the self-confidence, you're willing to admit, hey, this hasn't worked. This was a bad decision. And then you reverse course. There's nothing wrong with changing a direction based on new information. Curiosity. Leaders have to be curious. You can't just accept what's right in front of you. You have to be able to look around corners, or at least have some people that are close to you that can look around those corners. And to look around those corners requires curiosity. Why is something the way it is? Why do we accept certain things for the way they are? That's what I mean by curiosity, is challenging the status quo. Fairness, particularly fairness with people. People always make mistakes. Oftentimes, people aren't in the proper position. So I think you have to be very hard-nosed about performance, but at the same time, you want to be fair. And fair usually involves honest, empathetic communication to the subordinate as to what they are doing well, what they are not doing well, and what you as the leader expect of those people. Thoughtfulness. not only thoughtfulness as it relates to thinking through strategy and thinking through tactics and thinking through execution, but thoughtful about people. You know, what is going on with their families? What's going on in their lives? I used to spend a lot of time trying to understand the psychology of people that work for me. What needs did they have? And how could I try to satisfy those needs in an effort to get superior performance out of them? Authenticity. I mean, people know immediately whether you are a fraud. When you stand up in front of people, they can figure out in 10 minutes whether you are authentic or whether you are full of shit and a windbag. And organizations have an uncanny ability to quickly decide whether someone is authentic. And if you are authentic, that helps with the mission of influencing them and leading them to a place they couldn't get to by themselves. If they view you as not authentic, they tend to tune you out. And when they tune you out, there is no way that the organization can accomplish its mission and its objectives. And you have to be relentless, relentless in execution, relentless in ensuring that the details are understood, relentless in driving people to a different outcome. And then finally, integrity. Integrity is doing what you say. And that doesn't mean that you don't change, because oftentimes you have to change, and you may have to change your opinion about a leader. But the integrity comes in being honest about it and communicating and being authentic. So those are a couple other comments that I would have on leadership. Now, I want to just go through a couple other points here. Again, I think the overall role of a leader is to make sure that you have a strategy in place that is well lined up with the marketplace that you are in. Then the leader has to make sure that they have the assets, the people, the skills, the capability to execute that strategy. A financial model by which you can measure your performance so you know whether the strategy is working or not working. And then all of the characteristics of leaders I just took you through, that's how you bring it all together. And we'll find when we get to our next section on culture, the leader over a longer period of time creates that culture. It creates that environment where people either believe, and they believe in performance and accountability and hard work and discipline and curiosity, or a culture is created around dissembling, passive aggressive. Those are all characteristics of organizations that have not really bought into the leadership that needs to be positively projected on a relentless, disciplined way. So that's sort of all I had, George, on my notes here.
So
that's a lot of stuff, obviously.
Yeah,
but
correct. If I may ask you, the leader, based on what you're saying, really influences others in making you know, the organization work in the right direction or moving in the right direction. What is your perspective when it comes to how you organize the firm in a way that, as a leader, you make the right decisions? And I'm referring to the dichotomy of centralization versus decentralization.
We'll get into that when we get into the culture and the management system.
Okay.
But fundamentally, you have to understand where the organization is. For example, if the organization is running pretty well, in other words, you've got good financial systems, you've got good capabilities, you have got very capable leaders, typically that would call for more of a decentralized management system. Because what you want is you want capable leaders that are closest to the market, closest to customers, closest to the people, being able to make those decisions consistent with the overall strategy, but that is more of a decentralized model. On the other hand, if the organization does not have good processes, is not a disciplined organization, is not replete with good leaders, then you typically need to centralize. And you centralize to re-engineer and redo processes, to get control of the organization. And then over time, and this is a key part of a leader, is getting the right people in the right positions. And if you have the right people in the right positions, then you can delegate. If you have the wrong people, you can't delegate, because that will just create a chaos and loss of energy, discipline, and focus. But one of the key responsibilities of the leader, we're talking about leadership generally, but of the leader, is they have to make sure they have people that are surrounding them that believe in the mission, believe in the strategy, believe in what's being done, and have the character values that we just talked about. That is the CEO's responsibility, to get people that are different backgrounds, diverse, but share many of the same values, because integrity and authenticity and empathy and willingness to accept accountability and responsibility, good communication skills, the ability to accept that you're wrong, self-confidence. Those are value traits that you want to hire people that have those values. Then the other dimension is the skills. So, you know, a CFO needs to be really disciplined and good with numbers and financial models. Doesn't need to be a salesperson. A salesperson, on the other hand, needs to be extremely empathetic and great communication skills. So you want to surround yourself with people that share the same values and the same trait characteristics that we just talked about. And then get people with the right skills in the right position. I always use the analog of a football coach. You can have a great left tackle, but if you have that left tackle playing quarterback, the team isn't going to work real well. You could have a great receiver, fast, good hands, but if you put him playing offensive line, they're going to be completely miscast. So the role of the coach is to make sure you have the right skills in the right positions. But that means you need to understand what skills you need in an organization to execute the strategy. But what doesn't change are the human characteristics and the values. And if you have a team of leaders that shares those values and shares those characteristics, well, then over time, that gets transmitted down through the organization, and that's what begins to create culture.
So you've been an executive in several organizations. Is leadership experience transferable from one organization to another, or leadership skills transferable?
Well, let's break it down. So the skill part of it is highly transferable. If you are a great financial executive, can you take that skill set and go to another organization? Absolutely correct. What isn't quite as transferable is the human traits, the values and the characteristics. So you can take someone with really high integrity, great self-discipline, great self-confidence, and put them in a terrible environment, and all of those values, they won't go away, but they will be eroded. So values become an important part of the culture. And that's what I, when I used to hire people, I always made sure they had the right skills. But at the end of the day, I said, listen, here's the culture we have. This is a hard-nosed culture. It's performance-based. It's not, you know, good try, that's you did your best, that's all that matters. No, it's about getting results. And it is disciplined. It is hard work. It is relentless. And if you, as an executive, are not comfortable working in that type of environment, then you should not join the company. So skills are transferable. Values and traits are less transferable because those values and traits are individual, but they're also collective. And if an individual gets transplanted into an organization that doesn't share those values or those traits, it becomes very difficult and it's very hard for that person then to be able to perform at a level consistent with their own value structure and consistent with the performance they want to derive.
And one of the characteristics of a leader is to be trusted. This again and again is presented in various readings on academic studies.
Yeah, trust is an outcome. Trust is something that's earned. And it's earned by integrity, it's earned by honesty, it's earned by empathy, it's earned, it's not bestowed. And this is what I always used to tell my guys. I said, listen, you have a choice to be a leader, but you earn that leadership position by what you do. And if you do what you say, you act with integrity, you're fair, all the characteristics I took you through, that's what creates trust. So trust is important, but trust can't exist without the underlying values and characteristics I just took you through.
So we talk about leadership skills and traits and characteristics. If I go back to the fundamental question as to what a leader does, we talk about perhaps inspiring, motivating people, etc. Are these tasks different depending upon the company or... Yeah. Is there a commonality?
Yes. The leader has to have a vision. If a leader doesn't have a vision, it's very difficult. A leader has to have a vision of what they are trying to create. And then everything flows from that. If a leader has no idea what it is they want to accomplish, so it's about a vision and it's about goals. And, you know, we always talk about this, and this used to be, you know, one of the great consulting things of having a vision and a mission statement and all that stuff. And there's a lot of truth in that. But at the end of the day, the leader has to have a vision of what they are trying to create. And from that vision flows the strategy, which then flows to the assets, which flows to the financial model, and flows to the organization through communication, integrity, trust, discipline, relentless execution, all the things we just talked about. So the starting point is the leader has to know what it is they want to accomplish. If they don't know, it's doubtful they'll get there.
So on a different matter, Gallup organization has developed the strengths-based leadership approach.
Right.
And you might know about that.
I do.
But one of the questions is it a credible way in which you can lead an organization, that is by identifying the strengths of the team that you have, including your own? Or is it something above and beyond? I mean, the idea was not to identify weaknesses, but rather enhance the strengths of each and every one of the individuals in your team and capitalize on those attributes and qualifications and skills.
I think all that stuff. I used to use a model from Heidrick and Struggles that went through 5 or 6 characteristics. Things like business acumen, you know, empathy, intellect, those kinds of strengths. So yes, I think those are very valuable. But at the end of the day, it's how those strengths are put together and executed in the real world of conducting business and running an organization. Again, I'll give you a football analog. So the Eagles just drafted, I don't know whether you're a football, but they just drafted a lot of people. So they go through an enormous, enormous evaluation of strengths. How long are their arms? How big are their hands? What's their football IQ? What's this? What's that? And they have all those strengths. And that's great. But it doesn't amount to a pile of shit until you get them out on the field in the afternoon. And you see how they execute, how they assimilate, how they integrate those strengths, how they adapt those strengths to the unique circumstances of the business environment. So I think it's a great tool, but it is not the complete picture. And what a good CEO leader does is constantly assess the strengths of his team. What are they doing well? What are they not doing well? And encouraging them to capitalize on the strengths and try to minimize some of the weaknesses. And if the weaknesses are so glaring, some of those weaknesses can't be overcome. And that then means you need to find somebody that has some of those skills or strengths to offset weaknesses in other people. You know, I had a CFO, it was a great, great CFO and a good communicator, but absolutely terrible with his team. Didn't communicate, was not transparent, was not open. So I had to really work with him on those things because those are major derailment factors. In other words, they really get in the way of being successful. So sometimes people have some real Achilles heels that have to be addressed if they are going to be able to execute the job and drive the performance that's required.
So let's talk about power and leadership. Usually in a leadership position, you have power. Are there any circumstances under which, because of your leadership position, you might take advantage of the power that you have and make decisions that are not consistent with what your organization is thinking about?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So one, there's a lot of different power bases. I talked about the two primary power bases, intellectual and emotional. But within that, there's many gradations. So for example, people have a power base based on who they know in the organization. So familiarization, affiliation with other people in the organization. Some people lead because they're just so competent. They are so smart that people will respond to that leadership. Other people respond to a more of a emotional leadership style. And finally, one of the power bases is where you are in the hierarchy. Because in a command and control world, people higher in the hierarchy tend to have more power than people lower in the hierarchy. Now, I'm a big believer that you have to adjust your leadership style to the environment that the company is in. So let's say the company's in crisis mode. What we've just gone through with COVID, where decisions have to be made. That is not the time for endless task forces and other shit. That's the time for leaders to step forward, get facts, get information, but then make decisions. So within those power bases, George, there's different leadership styles. There's democratic leadership styles. There's autocratic leadership styles. There is consensual leadership styles. There's what I call affiliation leadership styles. And those leadership styles have to be adapted to the situation. And there's times when it needs to be very democratic. There are times when you have to be very decisive and it may be autocratic. There are times when you can step back and take a more affiliated, more consensual approach to decision making. You know, I always used to tell my teams that the decision on what needs to be done would be consensual, would be democratic, would be very open and transparent. In other words, everyone would have an opportunity to participate and influence what it is we were trying to get done. However, when it came to execution, that was no room for democracies or affiliation or task forces. It was about a relentless pursuit of execution. So it's power bases, and then it's types of leadership styles. And my point is, those leadership styles need to be adapted to the environment. You know, a very high-performing, capable organization that is producing great results, you couldn't put an autocratic leader in. You would kill it. On the other hand, an organization has no idea what they're doing, totally undisciplined, no accountability, no responsibility, performing very poorly, that requires a strong leadership style to get that team moving, or getting a new team, but moving in a better direction. Now, leaders can always abuse power. There's all kinds of abuse of power. But I would argue that the abuse of power stems from a lack of the personal characteristics and traits and values, not the other way around. In other words, a person who has got high integrity, is honest, is open, is transparent, will rarely, rarely abuse their power in an organization. A person that is dishonest, dissembling, not confident, does not communicate very well, has a higher propensity to abuse their power in a hierarchy. So abuse of power stems from the values. Leadership style needs to be concomitant with what the organization needs. And power bases is how people lead off of different strengths that they have.
So, you know, going back, my understanding based on what you have said is that leadership is contextual. That is, depending upon the context, the leadership style adjusts to the context if there is, let's say,
contextual or situational.
Yes. So the question then is, a leader adaptable in a different setting? That is, let's assume that you got used to an environment which, based on a complexity. you operate in an environment which is chaotic, or as a leader, you might be involved in an organization that has continuity and perpetual growth. Can you lead in an environment which is very disruptive and on a crisis mode?
Yeah, that's another very good question. I'd argue that that's harder. That's harder because people have primary leadership styles. That doesn't mean they can't adjust. As I said before, a good leader is willing to take feedback, is willing to acknowledge when they're wrong, and make adjustments. So by definition, a good leader that has those characteristics like curiosity, self-confidence, open to criticism, et cetera, is usually better prepared to make adjustments in their leadership style or other adjustments that need to be made. But I think people have a primary leadership style, and it's very difficult to completely change that leadership style. And we'll get into this when we talk about boards, but this is where boards have to be very good about understanding where the company is, what the company needs, and then matching that with the right leadership capabilities and style. And that's where boards often get it wrong. They either don't know where the organization is and therefore get the wrong leader, or they know what it needs, can't find the right leader, or they just make a mistake because sometimes leaders don't show their true colors until they are in a position of leadership. But yes, I think people can adapt. There's great examples of people adapting. But at the end of the day, people have primary leadership characteristics and traits and styles, and that needs to be matched with the right environment for them to be able to execute and perform at a high level. But this model I keep talking about of strategy, assets, financial model, leadership, that framework allows a leader to make adjustments within that framework. So then those adjustments become less individual, less personality-based, and more systematic within that framework.
Right. So I think from all the traits, I mean, this is my last question, for all the traits, the attributes, the characteristics, which one, based on your practical experience, was the most important characteristic for you as a leader, and therefore perhaps you can project this to be for a number of leaders? Which one do you think, we talk about integrity, authenticity, emotional intelligence, which one do you think is so significant to the point where without it, perhaps it's the number one, without it, you cannot even perform elementary functions?
Yeah, I believe the characteristics around emotional IQ are more important than the intellectual IQ. In other words, you can always hire a consultant to help you figure out intellectually what you need to do. But a consultant can never help you relate to the organization that you are leading. And those characteristics are much more on the emotional IQ spectrum than they are on the intellectual IQ spectrum. So if there's one, ideally you have both. The best leaders have both. They're good strategists, they're good executors, they can get people emotionally engaged as well as intellectually engaged. But the emotional IQ, the ability to relate to people and motivate people and inspire people to an outcome that they couldn't get themselves, is more important than the pure intellectual framework.
Okay. I think I have enough material, almost an hour. I think I can blend it with some of the knowledge that, the last thing, negotiations.
Yeah.
Are the negotiation skills part of the leader's tool set?
Yeah, it's a tool. It's a skill. I mean, negotiation skills, again, are things that you can hire. They're specialized skills, like legal skills. So
don't consider them important.
But the art of negotiation requires a lot of emotional IQ to understand how to negotiate. It's much more of an emotional transaction than it is a logical transaction, particularly you're buying companies. I mean, you're dealing with the emotions of CEOs and management teams and boards and shareholders. That's usually much more important than just the intellectual rigor. So negotiation skills is a skill. Is it the most critical skill for a CEO or for a leader? No, but it's a skill.
Okay. Okay, Mike, is there something else that you want to add?
No, I think that covers a lot of material here. So I think, I think that's all good.
All right. So the next topic is...